Good morning.
Good morning.
It is technically still morning, but it's like we might feel like we've been up a long time already. Thank you for your efforts so far. I realize it's much of this is very different than I would imagine it's very different than your everyday activity for most people. And I can feel a little awkward to not really know what you're doing. But that's fine. That's part of the practice, too. You know, is to it's really not know what you're doing, but to have present attention to what's going on and to be able to pick things up that are being transmitted there. And to follow along. And we can learn a lot from not getting things right. And for those who are more familiar with the way that we do things, there's constant refinement. It's not that you get it down and then it's all good, but rather it's constant refinement. And if you do get it all down, then, you know, then we change it. So it's all... So it changes for all of us. So the forms are not a... well, it sometimes can be taken as a block or off-putting. But these forms that we use in here, the bows, the way that we do things, is that's maintained because it's been proven effective over many years, centuries, as being... beneficial and efficient in helping people to realize themselves. Whatever we come to meditation or a practice like Zen to do, to really maybe to have a deeper look at this one that we are. Really have a deeper look at that. It is obviously a Buddhist tradition. Yeah, so we have the image there of Shakyamuni Buddha, and a lot of mention of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But we should know that the word Buddha means awakened one. So we're in the business of awakening. Awakening from many things, you know, from the constructions or the ideas or beliefs about life which may not be in accord with reality as it is. So the Buddhist tradition, and it contains all those wonderful ingredients, but Zen stands somewhat apart. Although completely Buddhist, it's also a different emphasis. Now, the founder, or who's attributed to be the founder of Zen Buddhism, was an Indian monk called Bodhidharma. So it'd be many generations after the original Buddha in India. Bodhidharma, from a southern Indian monk, traveled to China. And him and also, you know, many other people, some we don't know about, lost to history, you know. Maybe he's become somewhat of an archetype as well, and several characters mixed in there. But Buddhism came to China, and then the culture of the time there, Taoist, Confucian, you know, it takes on its own then unique quality, something that's not strictly Indian. And while Buddhism was taught there, sutras and other precepts, things that are written down, when Bodhidharma said something when asked to define Zen, he said it is an intimate teaching. I've also read the translation. An older translation was a secret teaching, but that sounds like something you might find if you go digging in the basement. And that's, metaphorically, that might be so, but An intimate is probably closer, an intimate teaching, not dependent on words and letters, not dependent on scriptures. Pointing directly at the mind, or at mind, realizing Buddha, realizing the awakened way. So in this sense, it is not a belief structure, Zen. It is not a religion, really, although it has, obviously, you know, religious aspects. We can use that. But to really to get the core of it, it is not reliant on words and letters, not reliant on any belief system, not reliant on a scheme, not reliant on a method, not reliant on something that's handed down or explained, something that's missing, something that's been found, but rather pointing directly at mind. Alive now. That pointing at mind is this pointing at mind, this expression, this living expression now. Realizing Buddha. Realizing really what that word means. Realizing what it is to awaken. Not as like flipping a switch, although sometimes it can happen in that kind of way. But this realization is a continual evolving. And it is inclusive of all people, all things, all phenomena, seen and unseen, everything, all together. The interconnectedness, the fact of interconnectedness, not the explanation of interconnectedness, but that living interconnectedness. The letting go of a seeing through of all the ways that we construct separation in our mind. The haves and have-nots, the people who are in the club, the people who are not. We see, of course, this playing out on the, all across the globe, the way we define ourselves and say, we are right, they are wrong. But rather, we transcend or realize before the appearance of dualistic notion. That this is one thing, this is right, and this is wrong. We think that way. We understand that way. But it is limiting. Long time after Bodhidharma, after several generations and Zen starting to gain its particular flavor in China, then an itinerant woodcutter from southern China, person of no rank and no social status, the sixth patriarch, becomes the lineage master. An example of doesn't matter where you're from, how much money you got or don't have, what country, what gender, any of those ways, open to all. Zen in China became a dominant religion or way, continued for many centuries, still does to this day. Eventually, Japanese monks traveled to China to study with Chinese teachers. So this is, again, fast forwarding. I'm just trying to give some context for this place with this. Japanese teachers, 13th century, 12th century, traveling to China, practicing and understanding Zen, and then being empowered to share that with others, returning to Japan, and then maintained and refined over many centuries. And then in this century, well, actually last century now, isn't it? Last century, I'm getting old. 60s, 70s, many teachers from the so-called Eastern countries come to America, bringing this unusual way, Zen and Buddhism. One of those teachers, a Japanese master, Maizumi Roshi, was the founder of this particular temple and training center. And he taught all comers, all people. Many monks, many people had jukai, which take on the Buddhist precepts. And then for those who were driven to practice very deeply or to stay the course, then became successors of him. And the abbot here, Tenshin Roshi, who's in this morning, was one of Maizumi Roshi's successors. So he had 12 successors, men and women. So this place is a continuation of the lineage that goes back to Shakyamuni Buddha and around the globe, which is quite cool, if nothing else. I think it's an amazing thing that we still have this. All to drive home this very one point the Bodhidharma brought up at the start, the intimate teaching, pointing directly, not dependent on words and letters. When we are in here, we sit. So last night we came in, had the necessary kind of orientation, so we're not all just, colliding with one another in here. Once we had that and things, finally the bells are hit and you sit there, then we experience the fact and the content of mind. Everyone in their own unique expression. The collected karma, the collected condition of a life sitting. The mind raising and fall, the rising and falling of thought. We are then faced with the choice in what to do with that. To look at why are we interested in meditation? What is it that we want to learn, gain from a Zen retreat? The heart of it, the fundamental heart, is Zazen. This practice of present awareness. The Zazen is to sit Zen. Za means to sit. Walk is walking Zen. Eat is eating Zen. Now we cherish sitting Zen, a Zazen, because that is where our nature, the original nature, as we say in the practice, is most apparent, but also most intimate. We go back to those words of Bodhidharma. It is an intimate teaching. So close, you can't see it. So close, it feels perhaps a little out of reach. So close that the mind is confused, our thinking mind, about what it is we're doing here, or whether I'm doing it right, whether it's a good period of Zazen or a bad period of Zazen, and where I stand on the scale of awake or asleep, deluded or enlightened. But all that is really required is to do or be this one thing that we are completely. So in this sitting, when we are in this sitting, to sit, to just sit, to arrange the body, arrange the breathing, to settle down, and to allow all things to be as they are, without preference. The tricky part. Without picking and choosing without finding fault. That is what it is to sit Zazen. To sit, to be straight and still, to find or not to make fault with whatever that content is, but to allow things as they are to be as they are, inside and out. Whether the mind is confused, sleepy, busy, or quiet. You know, we may find with retreats that the mind quietens down, and that's nice, a nice thing. Perhaps we're in very busy circumstances, and that's a good reason to come on retreat. But we don't practice to achieve a quiet mind. And we may find that the mind is actually, as we sit, is really churned up with all kinds of things rising for attention. But we don't sit in order to work those things out. We sit to sit. We walk to walk. To correspond naturally and directly to this living expression as it is. Because we are so adept at denigrating it or cherishing it. As human beings, we have attachment and aversion, as the Buddha identified. You know, we sit and we realize quite quickly that we'd rather be doing something else. Or we're doing something else and realize, you know, we want to keep doing that endlessly. But there is a time and a place for each expression. The practice of Zen is to accord with that, accord with this life. Now, the only place where we ever are, the only place that is ever really experienced. If we can realize the freedom, or realize freedom here, then you realize freedom. And you are a person who is free. You awaken now, here, then you are awake. And you're an awakened person. It may seem that it's somewhere in the future. We may look back and wish for the past. But life is always now, and life is always this. So some centuries later, after Bodhidharma, Master Dogen, Zen teacher in the 13th century, and a great writer and one of the key masters in the tradition of our lineage, I'm going to bring up a couple of paragraphs from him. This is from Body and Mind, Study of the Way. Master Dogen says, "Everyday mind means to maintain an everyday mind in this world or in any world. Yesterday goes forth from this moment, and today comes forth from this place. With going, the boundless sky goes. With coming forward, the entire earth comes forward. This is everyday mind. Everyday mind opens the gate of the inner chamber. Because thousands of gates and myriads of doors open and close all at once, it is everyday mind. Now, this boundless sky and our entire earth are like unrecognized words, a voice from the deep. Words are all-inclusive, mind all-inclusive, things are all-inclusive. Although there is birth and death in each moment of this life of birth and death, the body after the final body is never known. Even though you do not know it, if you arise the thought of enlightenment, you will move forward on the way of enlightenment. The moment is already here. Do not doubt it in the least. Even if you should doubt it, This is nothing but everyday mind. So, of course, not the easiest passage, you know. And part of that is, you know, what is the difficulty of the subtlety of what is being expressed, and also the way it's written and the way that it's come down to us. But we have, or are, this everyday mind. To maintain an everyday mind in this world or any world. It's interesting to maintain this everyday mind in this world or any world. Now, this maintaining this everyday mind is apparent. He says here, now, this is everyday mind. Is it enlightened? Is it deluded? Is it Zen or not Zen? See, those questions or those things are extra. This life that we are now is this everyday mind. If we are satisfied, or we realize the satisfaction of being thus, of not seeking something extra, then, as he says here, we maintain this mind in this world or any world, this realm or any realm. You know, when we sit, or when, just the way that where we live, we inhabit many different worlds, many different realms in our mind. You know, we can be angry, frustrated, tired. Also, you know, joyous, happy, those things too, inhabiting these realms. To meet those expressions, this expression, head on, and to inhabit it fully without looking for something else, without having to find fault or move away from it, then perhaps we see that this mind, whether it's this world or any world, it is always like, or it always is, this. You know, the irony is we may come to a practice to seek enlightenment, or to move away or get beyond where we are at, or where we think that we are at. But rather than looking for a breakthrough to somewhere, the activity of Zazen or sitting is to let things break down to this place that we already are. We tend to carry the constructions around in our mind of who and what we are, and who and what everybody else is. And from that construction, that hardens, and we make beliefs, take positions. This Zazen, or this practice, is to come into accord with this present awareness that we are, which allows picking and choosing belief or non-belief. But to understand the mind in its true context, the true relationship of self. You know, we are all adept at this idea of the self who I am, that begins with the name from the parents and is informed by our experiences in society and life. And sometimes that self's doing well, and sometimes it's not. But who are we, or what are we, what is this one before the name? When you take away, or you take away that label, and you really look at this life, is it not extraordinary? Is it not mysterious to be this? I find it very mysterious to be this. Now, we can cover that up and obscure it and turn it into just another day. Or, well, of course, you know, it's this, you know, what else here? No, when you look at it, really, this life now, as it is it not an extraordinary thing? And to see the fact that all things are rising and falling, the very truth of impermanence, the fact that drove the Buddha to start the whole shebang, that there is old age, sickness, death, everyone in every place is subject to that. All things that appear as form arise and pass away. To maintain or to realize the everyday mind as that is worth some pain in the legs. Yesterday goes forth from this moment. Today comes forth from this moment or from this place. We have this understanding or experience of past. But it's like a ghost in the mind. We remember things. Maybe we get a bit confused about what year that was when that happened or who was there. You know, you can't really find it anymore. It's a memory. It doesn't have a lot of weight or substance. But the past is this place. This is where we experience it. But there's no real life there. There's no real power. The future, he says, tomorrow, comes forth from this place. So the ingredients for what is going to happen next come forth from this place. We plan, set things up. We have an idea of what we'll do tomorrow, next week, maybe even a year from now. The further we go out, the greyer that becomes. We never really know. But always, life is now. This everyday mind opens the gate of the inner chamber. The boundless sky and entire earth are like unrecognized words or a voice from the deep. Nice expression. Opens the gate of the inner chamber. Again, this we could say that this is Zazen. When we sit, when we are quiet and still, the gate of the inner chamber opens. It sounds pretty, you know, it's like something from Harry Potter. The gate of the inner chamber opens. But experientially, maybe we come into a retreat or a session with a lot of chop on the surface, you know. This is what's going on in my life. It's all getting a bit real. This is happening, that's happening. What am I, you know, what do I do? Do I do this? Do I do that? How do I, you know, and we get very wound up with the conditions of life. We're human. Everybody is in this position. And we come to the practice of meditation. And then the opportunity to sit with that. To not to have to change it. To not to have to fix it. Or do something with it. But rather with an open presence and an open or an embrace of life, to sit and bear witness, to sit and be that. We do that, then, that inner chamber, that deeper aspect of this life, the intimate teaching of who we are, comes forward, becomes apparent, is realized. That's why it is necessary, or very helpful at least, for us to sit down, be quiet. Sit, and as they say, you know, when you sit down, sit all the way down. Sitting down and carrying on, turning and planning and plotting, And we do that, you know, and that's fine. Again, we're human. That's why a lot of the retreats that we do are 7 days. Because even by the process of attrition, you know, you have to drop that in the end. You have to drop it at some point. But to drop this conditioned thinking and worrying and chewing on nails that we do over and over, then perhaps a wonderful thing happens. As it's dropped, you realize you don't need to chew it. We don't need to obsessionally plan and try and fix. It is everyday mind. This boundless sky, an entire earth. Maybe a voice appear as a voice from the deep. You know, we might intellectually understand interconnectedness scientifically, or, you know, that we're all one. The world is all one. There's a sea of particles, you know. But it doesn't do that much for us to understand it in that way. But this voice from the deep is your voice, is our voice, is this voice. This life, which is always this, which we obscure and cover up and drown out with this, who I am, what I'm going to do, the kind of person I am, the kind of person they are, how am I going to, if only this, maybe one day that. As humans, we're very, unless it's just me, but as humans, we're very prone to doing that. And as we do that, living always between the ears, always constructing, always building, always deconstructing, then we miss out. You don't hear the voice from the deep. You don't see or feel or embody what it is to truly be the entire earth and the boundless sky. When you go outside, we see the sky. Is it separate? You know, do we fall for the idea that the sky is there? Or do we understand that the sky is here? And one need only look up. But there is not a gap there. There is not a gap anywhere when you really allow that to be realized. All these things that we do in this practice is to reveal this fact, this intimate self, the intimate teaching of who we are, so that it is realized and known. Not known in a way that you can defend your thesis of who you are, but known in that you know, you realize that you're in the right place, you realize it's the right time, you realize you have everything you need to be who and what you are now. Although there is birth and death in each moment, we see that, all, you know. I just picked a dead fly off from Azabatan when I came in. There's birth and death in each moment. The body after the final body is never known. Even though you do not know it, if you arise the thought of enlightenment, you move forward on the way of enlightenment. It is a curious thing to have this, to be this life. And yet we see that all things, people, come and go. And we have many ideas for what that might all mean or what comes next. But no one knows. We don't know it. That is dark. That is a wall. And that doesn't to know it is the wall. Yeah. And I'm not saying that what it is or what it isn't, what it could be. But that's not this now. You know, now we're here. Now we are alive as this. And Master Dogen down the centuries here encourages us to arouse the thought of enlightenment. Well, that is everyone here. You come to a retreat, you are interested in a spiritual practice or a way of understanding. That is the arousing the thought of enlightenment. You see, wait, you know, no explanation is really cutting it for me. I need to really to discover in my heart for myself. Then he says, you do that, you move forward on the way of enlightenment. We practice our realization deepens. You don't become better, but perhaps we are more alive, or we realize more the aliveness of this moment, whether it is sitting, walking, eating, brushing the teeth. You know, as Eckhart Tolle said, you know, this moment is not a springboard to the next. But often we take it in that way, trying to get through something in order to get to something else. The moment is already here. Do not doubt it in the least, Dogen says. And then he adds, even if you doubt it, this is nothing but everyday mind. So that is the choice. That's the choice in retreat. That's the choice in this practice. You know, the practice, Buddhism or Zen, does nothing for you. But you can use the practice of Buddhism and Zen to emancipate yourself from whatever it is that you feel blocks or hinders this life. The moment is already here. This is it. The only game in town. He adds here, even if you doubt that, it's still it. But then we're a person of doubt. It's up to each of us what we bring, or how we array ourselves with this life. You know, we can tussle endlessly with it, but we never win to fight against the way things are, life as it is. It's a great opportunity that each of us has given ourselves to have a day like this. To sit, where there is strength and support of a commonly intentioned people. Everybody has made that agreement, you know, to get along in order to be in here, you know, to sit together. Everyone holds everybody else up. That's a beautiful thing. You don't practice in isolation. We have this time of quiet and a place of natural beauty. The great teachings of sky, mountain, sun, wind, and trees. And I really encourage everyone, while we are here, while we have this time, to really to let that in. To let that penetrate. In the time outside of the hall, you know, if you're tired, take a nap. If you're not tired, take a walk. But be quiet. Let it in. look at this one that you are. So that is, that really penetrates. Look at this life that we are and that we have, its preciousness and its mystery. And allow these perturbances of our daily life, the things that are going on, let those calm. Let those things fall away. The only thing that needs to be dealt with, the only expression that needs to be matched and experienced, is the one that we are now. So we've made, you know, strong efforts so far. I appreciate everyone's help and input with the work practice to take care of the place, to sit as still as we can sit, and to show up. Please let's continue. You know, use this time now to really to drop an anchor into this present awareness. Resist the temptation, the siren's call, to think about what comes next or what we're going to do. Let that be aside. And as much as possible, let things be, this one be as it is, without the manipulation, without the picking and choosing. Thank you for listening, and we'll finish.